Hello everybody, this is Eva Herr and welcome to the Healing of Agape this week. This week we have with us Jim Turner of Swanken & Turner, a D.C. Washington law firm, who's going to talk to us about Codex this week. How are you, Jim?
I'm good. Good to be here, Eva. Thanks.
Is that what your, then what does your firm do? What's the majority of
it? We've been there since 1973. I started out originally in Washington in 68 working with Ralph Nader. My partner was the executive director of the White House Conference on White House Office on Consumer Affairs under Johnson, and we are a consumer interest law firm, but we do general law for all kinds of small businesses, consumer groups, environmental groups, individuals. We do some government work and so forth.
And where would someone find you on the internet?
We have a website which is swanken-turner.com. Or you can Google Swanken & Turner, and it comes up as the first listing on Swanken & Turner.
And do you have a phone number there?
202-462-8800.
I'm just curious. My old boss, Lanny Vines, used to do a lot with Ralph Nader. Do you know him?
I'm sorry, I don't.
So tell me about what you're doing on Codex. I know a lot's going on in Europe right now. I know it passed the Senate. And for the people who don't know, tell the listeners, if you would, what Codex is.
Codex is a voluntary association of 171 countries that gets together to figure out what the proper rules for trading food internationally will be. They recommend those rules. And the World Trade Organization has recognized Codex rules, Codex the organization and Codex the rules, as a standard for world trade in food. So its purpose is, if a country has rules about how to sell food in their country and another country wants to ship food into that country, the rules that are used to govern that trade are referenced back to the Codex guidelines. Recently, July 4th of 2005, the Codex Commission adopted a very restrictive vitamin and mineral rule. Not as restrictive as it could be, but much more restrictive than our current law. So there's a question as to what happens to our law. In fact, Codex does nothing to change our law, but it is working to get the countries in the rest of the world to adopt the restrictive law. If the rest of the world adopts the restrictive law, the United States companies in the United States will not be able to ship their products into other countries. Already, this is happening in Europe. Already, there are products made in the United States which cannot be shipped into Greece, Italy, Spain, Scandinavia. And the objective of the consumers and the health freedom groups that have been asking for a broader guideline is to create something worldwide that will be more like our law, so that consumers can have full free access to the total range of available dietary supplements.
Will this take our supplements away from us on the open market, Jim?
It will not take supplements away by action of law. There is nothing about the Codex rule that requires the United States to change its law.
So is that just fiction? Everybody's saying they'll be pulled from the shelves and you have to get a prescription?
It is fiction that the dietary supplements will be pulled from the shelf because this guideline has passed. However, the danger is that as the rest of the world adopts the restrictive guideline, it will become harder and harder for companies to make products just for the United States. And already, companies have begun to pull products individually. It will not be a big wholesale product disappear, but certain products will start to not be able to be accessible. It'll mainly be the higher potencies of certain vitamins and minerals, which are the first things that will begin to not be available.
So what we would have to do then would just be buy lots of bottles of low potency equivalent.
That's one of the strategies to be able to deal with that problem. However, what we're doing at Citizens for Health, we have organized the Citizens for Health Codex Working Group, and we're working on we have created a guideline, which will be up on our various websites sometime in the next few days, that says the way that the guideline should have been written. And it is much more open and supports access to dietary supplements. And the argument is that dietary supplements have a key role to play in helping to end world hunger and promote world health.
And one of those sites is www.citizens.org, right?
Yes, that's www.citizens.org. We have a codex section, and the guidelines will be on that codex section in the next few days. And they'll also be on our website at swankenandturner.com, swankenandturner.com.
Well, I'm sure pleased to know that they're not going to be taken away. I thought that that's what I was told, that they were going to be taken away and we'd have to go to a doctor and get a prescription and it would go up to like $200. So that's not right?
That's the direction that the European movement is attempting to move the world market. The adoption of this guideline on July 4th in Rome actually advanced that interest a little bit, but it also thwarted that interest to some degree. So the dietary guideline that was adopted by Codex is somewhere between what the German system is like and what the American system is like. And it is true that the Europeans, led by the Germans, would like to restrict dietary supplement use to very low potencies. They would like to have it be available primarily, if not solely, through doctors, and they would like to have it be not a major part of the healthcare approach of individuals. That's the struggle that we're launching. As far as a legal fiat, the dietary supplement guideline does not take the dietary supplements off the shelves by virtue of the dietary supplement guidelines actions. It's a purely voluntary guideline. Countries have to adopt laws, and how those laws are adopted is what determines whether the dietary supplements remain or not. In the United States, we will have to defend DSHEA, the Dietary Supplement Health Education Act. We have to defend that because there are bills that are being proposed to change it, so everybody needs to be alert. Remember, consumers sent close to 3 million letters to Congress in support of that act when it passed in 1994. We're going to have to get our pens and papers out again and defend against the efforts of Congress led by, it looks like, pharmaceutical lobbyists, but we have to defend the actions, we have to defend against the actions of Congress to try to undermine that bill.
Well, I'm curious, how on earth would doctors do this when the majority of them don't know anything about it?
Well,
doctors are
authorized by the Medical Practices Act to be able to do, under the law, anything that has to do with treating the body, preventing, treating, curing, diagnosing disease. They are authorized by their Medical Practices Act in each state to do that. And so they will, when something comes along that looks like it will fit into their practice, they just appropriate it. So doctors do acupuncture without any training. They do a whole range of things without any training in the specific thing that is being presented.
Oh, that's comforting to know.
Interestingly enough, when they fail, when they say, for example, use acupuncture needles in ways that don't work, then they say acupuncture doesn't work, and then they go on to something else. Now, it is a fact, on the other hand, that a very small number of doctors in this country, less than 30%, actually belong to the AMA. And there are many, many doctors, MDs, out there who are working very, very hard to learn nutrition, understand supplements, and so forth. So in the selection of a doctor, we are clearly in a buyer beware marketplace. Doctors, by law, are allowed to do anything that has to do with curing, diagnosing disease, preventing disease. They can do anything. You need to learn from them. Are they board certified? Have they studied in the field that you're interested in, and so on? And you have to ask them that when you're approaching them to be taken care of. What's their specialty? What's their training? What's their certification? What knowledge do they have? What schools have they gone to? School beyond medical school.
Is there a place where people could look and see what that is?
Pardon?
Is there a website where that kind of information
is stored? There is no actual website where that stuff is all laid out. What the best thing to do is to look at the website of any doctor you might be interested in. You can find, there are websites about doctors, complaints against doctors, which are useful to look at. I think Massachusetts has one. And I think probably what you want to look up is just, I don't know what they would be specifically, but look up doctor complaints, and I think there are websites that will come up.
Okay. I'm looking at this citizens.org website. Tell us about the anti-supplement bill, House Bill 3156.
This is a bill by a congresswoman from San Diego who is a Democrat. Actually quite a good congresswoman in general in many ways, but she has decided to roll back the protections for the consumer that are contained in the dietary, for consumer access to dietary supplements contained in the Dietary Supplement Act. Now, first of all, that bill does not address vitamins and minerals, but that bill does address amino acids and herbs. And then any ingredients that are involving amino acids and herbs, if vitamins and minerals are a part of it. And the objective that she has is to subject those to essentially the same kind of scientific risk assessment that is used for unsafe industrial chemicals that are used in the food supply. Things like food additives, color additives, animal drugs, pesticide residues. She is arguing that these nutrients and supplements, amino acids are essential nutrients, should be treated in exactly the same way as, let's say, a pesticide residue or a residue of a drug that's given to an animal. Both of which and others, food additives, color additives, show potential danger. The problem we have here is that individuals have a specific biochemical individuality profile for nutrient intakes, and to set up a system that examines them by making the smallest amount possible available will actually undermine the health of individuals. The other side of the issue on herbs, her bill is designed to overturn a court decision that was made in Utah earlier this year, which overturned the FDA ban on ephedra if it was at a 10 milligram level. The FDA has been very uneven in its application of its authority on herbs. Ephedra has been used for thousands of years. Maowang, Chinese medicine, has been used for thousands of years. It, even when the FDA said that they were banning it, they did not ban it for use as a Chinese herb. So you could go to a Chinese herb store and buy it, but you couldn't go to a drug store and buy it. Ingredients that are very, very similar to ephedra are in... ephedrine, for example, is a actual product you can buy in a drugstore, but you were not going to be able to buy ephedra. The court in Utah overturned that, and now this bill that Susan Davis is proposing is attempting to overturn that court decision. Some senators have also said they want to overturn that court decision. So that's the bill that's the major attack right now on the Dietary Supplement Act. It will not come up for action until next year, but we need to be prepared to defeat it.
I'm not sure I understand why she's classifying it with toxins.
I suspect that she's not sure either, and we are working to try to persuade her. They believe that there is a belief, which I believe is an urban legend, that ephedra has caused the death of 35 people. The way this has been developed is that 35 people who have died that have been looked at have been taking ephedra, as well as many other things, including one famous baseball player and one high school student in Illinois. This has led to a fervor on the part of certain individuals in politics, Senator Durbin from Illinois, for example, to create a prohibition on the use of ephedra. But the evidence doesn't support the argument that they're making. I mean, it's not, the evidence just doesn't support that. The General Accounting Office has looked at it, and they don't find the connection. There have been studies that have been looked at the potential of danger. They don't find it. And particularly at the low levels of 10 milligrams, it does not, there's no evidence that it causes any problem. So the idea of banning it makes no sense, and your point is really correct. Why would you treat this as a toxin? It's not a toxin.
What about amino acids? I don't understand that either.
Well, the amino acid argument is that in order to do amino acids properly, the body takes in... Hold on one second.
I have a conference call going here, Betsy. Betsy, I'm on the phone. I can't talk.
The amino acids, in order to be absorbed by the body, come in a balanced framework. They come in with a pattern of intake, and when they're taken in an improper dose, they can in fact be cause some problems. And we know that, for example, from something like aspartame. Aspartame is made up of two amino acids, which are very dangerous when presented in the way that they're presented in NutraSweet. So they're using the argument that an amino acid can be dangerous. The bill wants to block the use of amino acid substitute supplements, but doesn't do anything about blocking aspartame.
That was my next question. Why is that allowed when we know that does bad things?
Because the Congress doesn't think clearly about issues that are complex. They want to do very, very simple things. It's very hard to come up with, it's very hard to commit a complex idea or insight or reality into a piece of legislation that requires 435 people to vote yes or no on it. So they make very, very simple sloganeering statements, and then what they do is work very, very hard to maneuver their particular take on the issue through Congress and pay very little attention to what the actual impact on individual human beings will be. And then the way they do that is they do a very gross, that is very broad, very unsubtle statement. Amino acids can be harmful. And then they turn it over to the FDA and say, FDA, you manage it. And what FDA does is put up a huge roadblock for individuals to receive the profile of nutrient intake that they desire or that they deserve. And the FDA has regulated this way, you know, for the last 100 years, roughly.
What about, excuse me, I see on here that there is something pending that will bar states from warning citizens about drugs or vaccination safety. What is that?
Well, there's a bill which is going through Congress, Senate Bill 4, I believe it is, which is designed to protect against terrorist attacks. And what they're saying is that in order to prevent damage from a germ warfare, we must have everyone vaccinated. And so they're stockpiling vaccinations, and they're putting together set of rules that say you must be vaccinated or be quarantined. There's a whole series of rules coming through on this bill. They're very, very draconian, very frightening. Authority that they're granting. They're in the course of doing that. They're absolving all drug companies of any liability for problems that are caused by the products used under this act, which would be all vaccines, many products that are used to protect against flu and so forth. They've hyped this up now a bit by making up this story about the flu. A flu pandemic. Every decade there is a warning about a flu pandemic. And what's fascinating to me is that they're now talking about the last great pandemics. Now remember that you were all, you know, most of the audience was around when the last pandemic occurred, which is in their figuring was 1968. And then the one before that was in 1957. Now whatever occurred in 1968 or 1957, we did not require drug companies to be absolved from the side effects of their products. We did not require everybody to have to take a shot. We did not require create the authority to quarantine people and so on. We have a situation here where this whole notion of the flu pandemic is being flogged way beyond anything that would be justified for what is the potential that's likely to happen.
What are
They did this in the 1970s with the swine flu, which was a complete hoax. They totally misread all of the data, which said that the thing they called swine flu was not in fact dangerous. Yet they did try to vaccinate 200 million people, and fortunately they were stopped at 49 million. A bunch of people died from the vaccinations and waiting in line to get vaccinations and so forth. The whole area of the way we are talking about vaccines in this country is so hyped with fear and protection for the special interests that everyone should be extraordinarily suspicious when they see the issue of vaccination being presented to them.
Well, last week I tried to sign my son up for college, and they sent home a note saying that I had to get him vaccinated. He's 20 years old. So I called them up and I said, I don't want him to be vaccinated. Vaccinations are bad. And they said, well, he can come, but if something breaks up, he'll be banned from, breaks out at the school, he'll be banned from coming here. What are our rights? Can they keep us from going to school?
The rights are very murky at this point. In fact, the law does not permit the university to do that. There is no place in the law that permits that. However, it's gotten to be such a common undertaking by health departments and by universities and so forth to do this, that in order to vindicate the right, you have to go to court and fight for it. Perhaps that university has a good lawyer that told them they don't want to make an issue out of it because...
It was Georgia State, so it was.
Pardon? Well, if they try to make an issue out of it and somebody had the money and they want to fight the case and go all the way to the Supreme Court, ultimately there's probably an 80-20 chance that they would win. But it's a huge legal undertaking, and they've allowed this notion that vaccination, that they have the authority to require vaccination to creep gradually into the consciousness of all authorities, and they just want to do it. They do not have the right to do that, but the law is not very clear about the fact that they don't have that right. And so there have been a lot of fights to try to sort this out, and I would look at the Georgia law. I'm not fully up on the Georgia law, but many states like Arkansas, for example, have what they call philosophical objections. They have a law that's passed that does give authority to require vaccination, but everybody has the right to opt out by saying it is against my philosophy to take vaccinations. And that particular movement hopefully is going to spread across the country, and people will begin to get more and more alert to the fact that the way that we're doing vaccinations in this country is highly dangerous to the public.
It's terrible. It causes so many more people to get sick and die.
Well, the United States government has paid over $1.5 billion to people who have been harmed by vaccinations, and they want to require everyone to take them knowing that people are going to be harmed. It's an unconscionable way to run a country.
It really is. Well, what is CAFTA exactly, and how is that affecting us?
CAFTA, is that what you said?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, that's the Central American Free Trade Agreement, and it passed Congress by two votes earlier this year. And it is creating a free trade zone that goes basically from Canada all the way through Central America. And the concept is that all kinds of trade can go across borders without having tariffs assigned to them. And the apprehension about CAFTA is that it, like Codex and the WTO, will put pressure on the dietary supplement marketplace and force the market down to very minimal products rather than have it be the kind of robust choice that we currently have. So that piece of legislation was, we opposed it. We said it was improper, but we have adopted a strategy to deal with the fact that these free trade agreements are being adopted across the world. What we are arguing is that each country has the right under CAFTA, under WTO, under Codex, each country has the right to adopt its own dietary supplement law. So, for example, CAFTA does not require the United States to change DSHEA. However, CAFTA, WTO, Codex, and so forth are all pushing the market toward the lowest common denominator. And what we're arguing now and what we're presenting is a model law for all countries to adopt that is patterned after our DSHEA law that says that everyone can have access to dietary supplements in the choice and amount and so forth that fits their biochemical individuality. They can have access the way they want. And we're working on every country from Canada through Central America, in the North America Free Trade Zone, in Europe, and around the world, every country to adopt a law like Dechet, so that people in those countries and worldwide will be able, first in their own countries, to have access to the full range of dietary supplement choice, and that the market itself will have a full range of products in it worldwide. So CAFTA is one more piece of the puzzle that's working to create a market that limits access to dietary supplements.
Now, so many more people, you know, we're on the cusp of a change here in medical care and insurance. So many more people are trying to move to alternative medicine. What's going on there?
That is correct. We are on the cusp of a change. I want to begin by saying that this issue over dietary supplements in the international marketplace is a cutting-edge issue for creating a market in which people will begin by having access to all the dietary supplements they need, and then we can continue down the road to having access to all approaches to diagnose, prevent, treat, cure, and mitigate disease. That means an opening for all of the things which are called under various names, complementary medicine, alternative medicine, integrative medicine, all the approaches to health that are in addition to chemicals, i.e. drugs, surgery, and radiation. They're all the various approaches, including nutrition, including chiropractic, including acupuncture. All of those approaches and many, many more will be opened up by following the kind of principles that we're arguing for in blocking the codex rules and creating an alternative set of rules. Now, what's happening currently in those fields is that the public is way ahead of both the profession of healthcare and the government regulations of healthcare. It's way ahead. People are out working hard to find the best approach for their health. And they are getting quite a bit of support in many, many ways. There are new professions that are emerging. I've mentioned acupuncture. There's a whole range of old professions, such as naturopathy, chiropractic. All of these are robustly providing non-chemical, non-surgical, non-radiation interventions into the health picture of individuals. In addition, people are learning vigorously the powerful value of good food, good nutrition, good supplementation. They're learning it and using it, and their health is actually improving substantially when they do that. This kind of an approach is sweeping across the United States, across Western Europe, and it's also taking hold in countries around the world. And what we're doing with the kinds of discussions on policy that we've just been having is creating the frameworks and mechanisms that allow the public to be able to engage its own best judgment for its own personal health choices.
Do you don't know me, but I had a near-death experience. I do litigation, as a matter of fact. I do malpractice work for a living. But after I had this near-death experience, I woke up with a gift of medical intuition. Very accurate. I mean, very accurate. I'm actually using it with the NIH some. What will happen to people like me? Because I have a fear that they will come after people like me that are giving people insights to what's going on with their health that on things that haven't happened yet that doctors couldn't even tell them about. Will they come after people like me?
Well, it's a struggle. There is a very good chance that they will, and it's a struggle. Very interestingly, the NIH did a study on prayer.
I'm involved in that one on the glioblastoma.
Yeah. Now the point is that each one of the institutions of the culture is in the midst of a very serious struggle around this cusp that you're talking about. And the struggle is very interesting. Let me give you a couple of this. Are you still there?
Yes.
I had a noise on the phone. Let me give you a couple of examples. The notion of having other than our traditional medical thinking be used in helping us address our health problems is a long-standing notion throughout history. It's very important. What we have is the reductionist scientific model being used to give us insight about knowledge that we get in all kinds of ways, only one of which is using reductionist science. There is nothing wrong with reductionist science. It is a very powerful tool. It gives us great insights. The problem is that political authorities, professional leaders, and so forth try to argue that the only knowledge that people should be allowed to rely on is that knowledge which comes through reductionist science. And then the example that I use, or the metaphor that I use, it's like going up into the attic of an old house with a flashlight. The flashlight gives you, is like the reductionist science. It gives you insights about what's there. You shine it on an old picture. Yeah, there's an old picture here. You shine it on a skeleton that's, you know, from the medical office, and it's there. And you say, oh, it's there. And you start describing what's there. That is all very powerful. Science helps us in that way. However, where science goes awry in conjunction with law is when they say only the things which we've shined our light on are here in the attic. Everything else doesn't exist, and it does not exist until we shine our light on it. So what happens is the scientific discipline says until we've done two double-blind studies in two animal species and one study in humans and show both that this thing is effective and safe, we do not believe that it is either safe or effective. The fact of the matter is that whether or not you do the study does not change whether or not the thing is safe or effective. Now, when you're doing that for very seriously dangerous chemicals, it makes sense to be very cautious. But to apply that same kind of thinking to, let's say, medical intuitives or to dietary supplements or to a whole range of things where science, first of all, hasn't focused its light, and where when it does focus its light, it addresses things that are very complex and difficult and not easily resolvable, to come up with the idea that because our science has not been able to prove that this thing is true, therefore it's false, is a huge, huge error that has led us way down the wrong track. In the United States today, following that science, we are in every decade of life. More Americans die than in more than 50 other countries in the world, percentage-wise. More Americans die than 50 other countries in the world following the medical system we have. When the World Health Organization evaluated the American health system, we were 35th in the world as far as providing health care on the basis of generally accepted standards worldwide. We have a healthcare system that is the most costly in the world and is very nearly the least effective. Not the least effective, but the least effective among all the industrial companies.
Well,
very costly,
like
least
me,
effective.
What could somebody like me do to protect myself? Other than
first
say,
of all,
I don't think you're in
any great danger.
I'm sorry.
Secondly, you want to be very careful about what claims you make for your capabilities. You know, the claims that you make, you say, this is what I do. Here's how I know how to do it. Here's the associations I belong to, if any. Here's the kinds of studies I've been involved in. Here are people you can call for understanding how I've been effective in their lives. And you do not overstate what it is that you do. And you put everybody on notice that this is not a widely accepted thing. This is something that you've stumbled on, that you believe, that people that you work with believe, and you're very, very careful to be sure that anybody who comes in your direction is thoroughly understanding of the fact that this is a total outside-the-framework approach, not something that's licensed by the state, not something that's recognized by the medical authorities, but something that many people have found to be useful. And the more that you're clear with whoever it is that you're working with, the safer that you will be. And you probably want to give them that in writing so they have it in their hands and they can read it and can understand it. And then when you give them specific statements that you're talking about, you say, look, I'm telling you what I'm getting through my approach. I want you to understand I am not telling you this to cure, treat, mitigate, or prevent a disease. I'm just telling you the events that are going on around you to take into consideration as you make your choices to move forward. And you do those kind of things, and you will generally be pretty safe.
Okay. Is any of the bills that's pending right now or any legislation pending, Will it help us get insurance coverage for alternative, complementary, and integral medicine?
Well, there's a movement now underway for what are called medical savings accounts, or health savings accounts, I think they're called now, health savings accounts. And they're very controversial, and there are a lot of things about them that need to be looked at with great care. However, there's one point about them that's quite interesting. A health savings account right now, you put in an amount of money, I believe it's $2,500 a year, that goes into this account tax-free. And you're allowed to use it for things that are identified by the IRS, the Internal Revenue Service, as legitimate things to spend money on for health care. And it appears that the IRS standards are going to be broader than the standards that are currently used by HMOs and so forth regarding payment for health care. The reason for that is that the HMO is basically spending its money in its mind. The money the HMO has to spend to cover a health care cost is money that comes out of its corporate pocket. However, the money that the IRS is saying gets set aside is money out of your pocket. So that the idea that you can spend it for a broader range of things is becoming, it looks like it's going to become part of the policy framework. So Citizens for Health is cautiously supporting HSAs as a way of expanding access to things that are not currently paid for by HMOs and insurance companies.
Is it in the foreseeable future that it would be recoverable under regular insurance?
Some things that are on the edge are moving toward being covered. For example, acupuncture is currently covered by probably a couple hundred insurance companies, not by most, but by many. There are other things. There's a struggle back and forth around chiropractic as to whether or not what it does in certain situations or not should or should not be covered. That's a struggle. The more unconventional things, like nutrition, for example, in some instances it's covered, but in almost all it's not. So trying to move this system to covering things that are not easily demonstrable by scientific studies is going to be very, very difficult. That is also that's a factor in why the system itself is actually in collapse. I would be very surprised if 10 years from now we have the kind of healthcare system that we currently have.
That's one of the things I hear in my head, that it's not going to be there anymore.
Mm-hmm.
It's not going to be there. Now, does any of the laws have anything that, everything's pharmaceutical-based, it seems. Do any of the laws have anything to do with natural supplements versus laboratory supplements?
Well, they don't. The laws don't have anything to do with the actual makeup of the product, but there are tiny openings toward making clear through labels and labeling, what the content or makeup of the product is, and whether or not it is quote natural or not natural. And that is a very important part of where the unfolding struggle needs to be focused. There is data that is beginning to demonstrate persuasively that the manufactured dietary supplements are not as effective in achieving their goals as the more natural dietary supplements. And there are some very technical scientific reasons why that would be true.
Doesn't bind appropriately.
That's correct.
There seems to be some focus on vitamin E and C specifically. Why is that?
When you say focus, what do you mean?
Well, I just hear that there's...
There was a study done. It wasn't actually a study. It was a review of a number of other studies that was done that came out and said vitamin E was not as effective as people had claimed that it was. Unfortunately, it was a severely flawed review. It overlooked many studies that showed the opposite. It failed to examine the actual mechanism of action of vitamin E. It took a bunch of studies that were done and pulled them. I think there were 19 studies that were pulled together, and the selection criteria for the studies focused the outcome to be a negative outcome. That's one of the serious problems with our scientific approach right now, is that the criteria that are used to design a study often contain within them the outcome of the study.
Right.
The criteria decree what's going to be the outcome.
Mm-hmm.
That led to a lot of debate, but there doesn't appear to have been any substantive undermining of the significant value of natural vitamin E. On vitamin C, there is a whole debate about whether or not at really, really high doses, some people have will have a kind of dysentery type response. And that is a fact, and people just need to be aware of it. It is not all that dangerous, but the idea to create a 60 milligram limit on the intake of vitamin C, because some people may have diarrhea at high doses, is the kind of run amok nature of the legal system that we have governing our healthcare system. This is a system that did not allow you to say prunes will help with diet, help prevent constipation. That you're not allowed to say that.
Right. Like hydrogen peroxide cures a million things, and they won't let you, the doctors, say the word, practically. One thing I have to, we don't have much time left, but I have to ask you this question. When I do readings for people, lately I have, well, I'd say within the last year, I bet I've received 10 or 15 calls from people that I've read that end up having glioblastoma brain tumors. And if you know anything about those, you know that when you get one, the first thing they do is put you in an MRI, and when they do that, the thing takes off like wildfire, and you're dead in less than a year. Well, I'm convinced in my head that this is caused by artificial energy, because every time I read one, somebody that has one or develops one, they live near a nuclear plant, or either they live near a place where the transport goes within a few miles of their house. In other words, artificial energy is starting to do terrible things to people. What's going to happen there? I mean, eventually somebody's going to bring, I did some research on it, and I see a few law firms paying attention to artificial energy. What's going to happen there?
Well, that's an enormous struggle right now. First of all, we're working blind in the resonance field, so just take cell phones. Cell phones are one of the areas that carries a kind of energy that is problematic. And there's a huge debate about, well, where cell phone towers go and whether or not putting an earphone in your ear is more dangerous than talking on the cell phone directly. Now, we're being totally speculative here. I heard a cell phone industry spokesman say that while there were a statistically significant number of tumors on the of excess tumors on the side of the brain where people were using their cell phones, in one study that was done, it wasn't really a problem because they were benign tumors, not the cancerous tumors. I thought that was a very interesting way of dealing with that particular problem.
Mm-hmm.
But setting that aside for the moment, my suspicion in looking at the energy medicine world and seeing what's going on in research in energy is that there are actually positive and negative frequencies, and that what we're going to need to do is work really, really hard to come up with guidelines that talk about biologically compatible frequencies for things like the cell phone and other uses for energy. Because remember, energy can be very, very health-giving as well. It's not purely that it is a negative. And so there are people out there using energy treatment systems that are having very positive impacts.
I think it's the artificial ones. I was talking to this radiologist from Duke University the other day about glios, and he said, you know, I was in a lab one day, and we had two petri dishes of glio cells. And I said to my buddy, what would happen if we exposed these glio cells to the MRI? And the guy said, I don't know. So they took one petri dish and put it in the MRI for 15 minutes and then took it out and let them sit for 3 days. In 3 days, the one in the petri dish that had been exposed to the MRI had quadrupled the cells while the other one sat there.
Well, one of the things that you should do is tell him that he really needs to publish that. It's really, really important for that to get into the medical literature. Additionally, I just want to add that the main issue about NutraSweet when it was going through approval was the glioblastomas that existed in the rat studies that Cyril basically manipulated. When they manipulated these studies, what they did is that they ran a study and got a very high level of brain tumors. They ran another study in which it's very unclear that the animals were fed properly and got a low number of tumors, and they mixed the two studies together and argued that the average was not statistically significant. When the Public Board of Inquiry reviewed that set of studies, they said that the outcome left on the question of whether or not NutraSweet aspartame would cause brain tumors, and therefore refused to approve its marketing. Donald Rumsfeld, of course, jumped in as the president of the company and manipulated the legal process and got the thing approved by the FDA commissioner, of the FDA scientists.
Uh-huh.
So right after that, there was a 10% increase in the number of glioblastomas in humans. My sense is that it may be a combination of things, that the chemicals are creating those cells, and then perhaps they are being exacerbated by other events.
That's
like the energy.
That's what I think, yeah. Well, what can we do, Jim, as citizens, if we hear you on the radio? What can we do?
Well, I would urge everyone who listens to this to join Citizens for Health. I mean, first of all, it's citizens.org. Go to that website and register. You can register for, it doesn't cost anything to register. It costs $40 to join. But if you register, you'll be in a network of information. We've got over 100,000 people are now regularly on action alerts and so forth that we put out. And we've had very significant impact. Senator Durbin tried to attach a very anti-dietary supplement rider to the Defense Appropriation Act last December. And within 24 hours, we had 25,000 letters to Congress saying don't do it, and he withdrew it. It's very important to understand that that's the way citizens will affect things. And so we would like to have everybody that we can in the list. That doesn't cost anything to be on the list. Get on the list and watch the actions and see what things can be done. And as you take the actions, then gradually you might want to either you join immediately or as things start to develop, you might want to join. There's good information on the website. There'll be more. It's creating a community which is working across the country to advance. We're working to advance access to dietary supplements, to complementary alternative medicine, and to safe food and water. And we've got projects going in all of those areas.
I have to ask this last question. Have you ever had a conversation with any of these politicians? Do they not realize they're doing this to their own families?
Well, the interesting thing about the politicians is that they're inside a particular system, and they don't have very much range. So I'll give you an example of a very, very interesting congressman. He was a great congressman when he was a congressman, Berkeley Bedell from Iowa, great congressman. And when he left Congress because he got Lyme's disease, and then he went and got an alternative treatment for Lyme's disease, he just went and got it in Iowa. He didn't realize when he did it that it was illegal, and the FDA was after the person that gave it to him, but it cured his Lyme's disease. Then he was diagnosed with prostate cancer, and he went and got an alternative cancer treatment. It cured his cancer. And he's a vigorous, vigorous advocate of alternative medicine. And I've spoken to him on many occasions, both when he was in Congress and out of Congress. I asked him once, for example, about his wife had a headache, and I said, well, do you use acupuncture? He said, we saw acupuncture in China. It was the most amazing thing. We saw a woman have an operation, and it was done with acupuncture, and she was awake the entire time, and when we went and talked to her afterwards, she had no pain, and in fact, the whole thing cost $5. And I said to him, well, this is while he was in Congress. I said, well, what do your colleagues in Congress say to you when you tell them that story? And he said, oh, we don't have the courage to tell our colleagues in Congress about things like that. It's a group of people who have a mindset that don't accept new ideas at all, let alone easily. But also, in addition to that, when Berkeley Bedell got out of Congress, he began to look at the FDA and realized that he was on a committee that oversaw FDA. And he said, I could not believe when I got out what this agency was doing. If I had known when I was in Congress what I know now, I would never have voted for most of the bills I did on FDA. That's the kind of situation we have.
Unbelievable.
The Congress is completely out of touch with what's actually going on in the country because their way of gathering information, it has nothing to do with getting knowledge. It has to do with getting votes. So if they look at somebody and look at them as a vote, and you say something to them, they will take it into consideration. But the thing they hear most is the thing that people who are voters who are being lobbied by people with money tell them. And so that's the way they operate. They are completely out of touch on certainly on the healthcare issue. And they are probably out of touch on several other issues that are of equal importance, energy, for example.
Well, Jim, I can't thank you enough for coming on my show today. You have been a wealth of knowledge, and I hope that you will keep in touch with me. And when you get some new information, if you would ring me up and say I'm ready to inform the world again.
Absolutely, and I certainly appreciate it. And I hope that the people who hear this program will go to the Citizen site, and if they like the site and watch it's developing, will sign up to be on the listserv and then ultimately become members. And over time, we're moving ahead to create a nationwide and we hope worldwide, we intend worldwide consumer movement for better health.
I know, and I'm going to, and I'm going to email your site to everybody I know and ask.
Great, terrific.
That.
And in the meantime, if you want to just check with me at any point when you hear about something in this field, I'd be more than happy to talk with you.
Great.
And when I come up with new things, I'll call you.
Thank you. Agape, my friend, and thank you.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
You have been listening to BBS Radio, a Bloggins.com production and a Service to Others endeavor. Thank you very much for tuning into our radio program, and we wish you much peace and joy on your journey.